Articles by Fearlessly Courageous from the desk of Dennis Piller. Is there really no good in me or my spouse? How can I believe that? I pray you will hear me out today because this will take God's grace and some verifying on your part for you to receive today's message. Our Courageous Men's Group is doing an in-depth study of Romans. In chapter 3, verses 10 through 12, it says, "There is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understands. There is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are all together. They have become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, not one." Matt Henry, in his commentary, says, "Here again is showing that all mankind is under the guilt of sin as a burden, and under the government and dominion of sin as enslaved to it to work wickedness." We had a hearty discussion about what it means that no one does good, not even one. Even Christians struggle with accepting this. Some Christians have not acknowledged it as if that it's not even scriptural. A definition. Total depravity basically states that human beings since the fall inherited the guilt and sinful nature of Adam, and that absolutely everything they will ever do is affected by sin. How we think, how we reason, and how we justify. This does not mean every person is as sinful as they possibly could be. It does mean that every part of a person has been corrupted. The heart, the mind, the will, affections, desires, critical thinking, everything. I've listed a number of scriptures for you to do your own digging in this, and I pray that you please do. One of the reasons that so many reject this is because it presents a low view of man. Human nature loves to be coddled. It loves to be encouraged. Men and women love to be told of their self-worth, self-importance, and innate goodness. We raise our kids that way. Even fifth place gets a trophy. I know that's true of me. The truth is, what I'm sharing is especially hard for young believers and even for mature believers to receive. I think that people could never understand this without God's grace, and neither can we. Mankind is not only undeserving, but actually worthy of the eternal wrath of God. You may be beginning to understand why we don't talk about religion or theology at a dinner party. But may I ask, whoever talks about these things, how can we know them if someone doesn't teach us or challenge us so we can teach others? Psalm 7:11 says, "God is angry with the wicked." But we define wicked as a political figure we're not voting for. But we don't like that word when it describes the state of all persons outside of Christ. We could never say that out loud. The truth is, not even Christians want to talk about this topic because it grates against human experience. Because we too think we do a lot of good things along with a lot of people we know. We're good dads and moms. We help people. We're usually kind and we believe in God. Yeah, we know we're sinners, but to say there is nothing good in us? I just can't swallow that. It's just another myth of a 2,000-year-old book that has a lot of other good stuff in it. Anselm of Canterbury, the brilliant medieval theologian, saw in this truth compelling evidence for God's existence. He noted that everyone agrees that there is a great variety of goods in the world. There are physical goods, intellectual goods, and relational goods. This is a basic fact of reality. From this fact, he asked, what makes all of the good things good? And he concludes that the good things are not independently good. They're not good by themselves. Rather, there must be some ultimate good that makes all of the other things good. Wow, that's a lot to take in. In other words, he reasoned there must be a supreme good that is the source of all other goodness. In doing so, he was following in the footsteps of David in Psalm 16. David confesses that there is a supreme good that makes all other goods good, and Yahweh is this supreme good. Or as David prays elsewhere, God is my exceeding joy, literally the joy of joys in Psalm 43:4. David knows his refuge is in the foundational joy on which all other joys are built. So can we go just a little bit deeper? God's goodness is unique. All created goods, I think you'll agree with me, are finite, temporal, and changing. But God is infinite, eternal, and unchanging. The Apostle James celebrates this fact in James 1:17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Please stay with me. Created goods cast shadows. As good as they are not infinite goods. They are limited and they fade. But God has no shadow. He does not change. His goodness is without boundaries or limits. He is an absolute and essential goodness. We call a man righteous because he meets the standards of righteousness. We call a man wise because he conforms to the pattern of wisdom. But God is the standard. He is the pattern. He's not merely righteous. He is righteousness himself. He is not merely wise. He is wisdom itself. He is not merely strong. He is strength itself. And he is not merely good. He is goodness itself. Or again, the Lord is not merely righteous, wise, strong, and good. He is the righteous, the wise, the strong, and the good. This is what it means for God to be God, for God to be Yahweh. I am who I am. And this is why Jesus can say, no one is good except God alone, Mark 10:18. He's the fountain of all goodness, the source and origin of all pleasure and joy. He is infinite, eternal, unchanging, inexhaustible, self-sufficient, and all-sufficient without limit or diminishment. Lastly, God has no need of my goodness. Because God is the source of all goodness, my goodness does not benefit God in any way. He is above all needs and all improvement. David in this psalm revels in the fact that he has nothing to offer God but his poverty, his weakness, and his need. He has no gift to give to God that he might be repaid. The Lord is all sufficient, and it is because he is all sufficient that he can be sufficient for me. I pray you are taking this in. And this means that God is not merely the ultimate and supreme good. He is my good. And for him to be my highest good is for him to be my greatest pleasure. My ultimate well-being and happiness are found in him and him alone. Jonathan Edwards, who lived from 1703 to 1758, expressed this glorious truth as well as anyone in his sermon, The True Christian's Life, A Journey Towards Heaven. I want to quote this as I close. God is the highest good of the reasonable creature. The enjoyment of him is our proper happiness and is the only happiness with which our souls can be satisfied. To go to heaven fully to enjoy God is infinitely better than the most pleasant accommodations here, better than fathers and mothers, husbands, wives, or children, or the company of any or all earthly friends. These are but shadows, but God is the substance. These are but scattered beams, but God is the sun. These are but streams, but God is the fountain. These are but drops, but God is the ocean. I pray that you make it a Jesus-filled day.